Welcome to Storytime by Chava. We are up to chapter 75 of the book Once Upon a Journey, Volume 2 by Rabbi Zalman Ruderman. The chapter is called An Unwelcome Deposit. When the prince's men arrived at the home of the bishop, they were shocked to find him waving his arms and shouting in panic. They could not understand what he was saying. He was not making sense at all. It was as if the miracle at the marketplace had caused him to lose his mind. After trying their best to deliver the prince's message, the men gave up and returned to the castle empty-handed. The prince trembled when he heard what had happened to the bishop. He was convinced that the bishop had been punished by heaven for the trouble he had caused the Rav, and was now very worried that he too would be punished for trying to force the Rav to break the Torah laws. The prince hurried to Rav Yitzchak's home to beg his forgiveness. "I am ready to do whatever you instruct me," the prince told the Rav, "and I will pay you whatever you wish." To his amazement, Rav Yitzchak did not ask for anything. "It is not your fault," replied the elderly Rav. "From birth, you have been surrounded and educated by people who hate Jews and the Jewish religion. It is not surprising that you acted as you did. My only hope is that these tragic events will have taught you something about the Jews and Judaism that you will remember for the rest of your life." The prince nodded humbly. He felt greatly relieved that he would not be punished, and he thanked the Rav. As the prince was about to leave, Rav Yitzchak turned to him and said, "I actually do have something to ask you. You see, according to the laws of our holy Torah, a kohen, and you are now familiar with the concept of the kohen, is not allowed to walk through a cemetery or step over dead or buried bodies. I would like to request that you have a tall wall built around the exact spot in the marketplace where Sigmund and the divorcee are buried, so that in the future, no other kohen will accidentally walk over that spot." The prince was glad to be able to do a favor for Rav Yitzchak. "I will give the order for a wall to be built there immediately," he declared. And so, within a few days, builders had encircled the area where the miracle had occurred with a large stone wall. For centuries, this wall prevented kohanim from stepping over the buried bodies of the couple. It also served as a silent reminder of the wondrous event that occurred in the heart of Krakow, causing a public Kiddush Hashem. And that is the history of the strange wall that the Maharal of Prague discovered while learning in the city of Krakow. The Maharal later repeated the story to his children and grandchildren, and that is how Rachel knew its details and was able to repeat it to her own daughter, Devorah Leah, the sister of Baruch. The Maharal continued learning in Krakow for 5 years, Rachel explained. During that time, he studied with people who later became known to the world as Torah giants, such as Rav Moshe Isserles, the Rama, who was then a young man, and Rav Moshe Luria, the Maharshal. Eventually, the three of them became known by all Jews for their incredible Torah knowledge. They are amongst the greatest Rabbanim of all times. Now, the Maharal, if you remember, was already engaged to Perel, the daughter of a wealthy businessman, Shmuel Reich. During the time that the Maharal was in Krakow, his future father-in-law lost most of his business and all of his wealth. He sent a letter to the Maharal explaining that he no longer had the funds he had promised for the wedding, nor would he be able to support the couple after their marriage so that the Maharal could continue learning in peace. "Therefore," he wrote, "if the Maharal wished to break the engagement and find another woman to marry, he was free to do so." Reb Shmuel and his daughter were certain that the Maharal would break the engagement. To their surprise, although the Maharal was deeply pained to hear the bad news about his future father-in-law's losses, he would not even consider breaking the engagement. He believed and trusted that his shidduch, like every shidduch, was made by Hashem. Why would he want to break something that Hashem had arranged just because of money? Who provides wealth if not Hashem himself? That same day, the Maharal sent back a reply explaining that as far as he was concerned, it made no difference whether the father of his kala was rich or poor. Perel was delighted to receive this reply. Now that her father had no money, she decided to open a small store of her own in Prague. She would bake and sell bread, cakes and pastries and would hopefully earn enough to feed her family. The Reich family that had always lived a life of wealth and luxury now had to be happy with just enough food to survive from one day to the next. Meanwhile, the Maral continued to travel from one place of study to another. After many years, when he reached the age of 32, a war broke out around the city of Prague. Worried about his family, he returned home. And shortly after returning to Prague, he married Perel. During that period of time, while the war was still raging, an army captain entered Perel's small bakery. Perel watched in alarm as the captain gathered the food from every shelf and unloaded every basket. The store was soon almost empty of baked goods. When she asked him for payment, the captain told her that he did not have any money with him at the moment. He promised to return with full payment a few days later. Perel did not know what to do or say. It was already so difficult for her to feed her parents and her own small family. What would she do now without money and with nothing left to sell? What would her family eat? How could she obtain new goods to sell in her store? "I'm sorry," she bravely told the captain. "I cannot allow you to take all this food on credit for a number of days unless you give me something in exchange that I can use to do business. Otherwise, my children will starve." The captain was moved by Perel's firm yet gentle way of speaking and her determination. But what could he do to help her? He needed this food urgently for his soldiers, and he did not have cash to give her. "Here," he said at last, "take this as a deposit." He removed his fancily embroidered metal jacket and handed it to Perel. "Keep this with you, and when I return in 2 or 3 days with the money, I'll take it back." Perel had no idea if the jacket was worth much or not, but she realized that she had no choice but to accept it as a pledge. The captain left his jacket on the store counter and carried sacks filled with bread and baked goods to the horse and carriage that waited for him outside. 3 days passed, and the captain did not return with the money. After the 10th day had passed without the man returning, Perel and her family did not know what to do. They had survived on the small amount of food that remained, but they could not last much longer. Perel turned to her scholarly husband and told him all that had happened. The Maral listened carefully and then asked his wife to bring him the soldier's jacket. To her amazement, the Maral began to remove the jacket's lining.